London calling in the North American service of the BBC. Next in our program, we present a magazine survey of the day's news gathered from the battlefronts of the world. Stand by for Radio Newsreel.
This is London calling. The British Broadcasting Corporation presents Radio Newsreel. At this time, we bring you the voices and stories of the men and women who make the news of a world at war. British, American, and Canadian troops of Field Marshal Montgomery's 21st Army Group are across the Rhine. And tonight, in this edition, Chester Wilmot, Winfred Vaughn Thomas, and Stuart McPherson with the 21st Army Group bring you frontline dispatches of the great attack. This is Jack Peach, speaking for Radio Newsreel from London. At 6 o'clock last night, the tension along the lower Rhine was suddenly split wide by a terrific bombardment. And for 3 hours, Allied artillery plastered the German side of the Rhine. Field Marshal Montgomery had given the word to his troops.
21st Army Group will now cross the Rhine. The enemy possibly thinks he is safe behind this great river obstacle. We all agree that it is a great obstacle. But we will show the enemy that he is far from safe behind it. This great Allied fighting machine, composed of integrated land and air forces, will deal with a problem in no uncertain manner. And having crossed the Rhine, we will crack about in the plains of northern Germany, chasing the enemy from pillar to post. The swifter and more energetic our action, the sooner the war will be over. And that is what we all desire. To get on with a job and finish off the German war as soon as possible. Over the Rhine, then, let us go. And good hunting to you all on the other side. And across the river they went. A few seconds before 9 o'clock at night, BBC war correspondent Chester Wilmot stood in the tower of the building on the bank of the Rhine. Under the brilliant moon and the roaring canopy of our shell fire, he waited for 0 hour. Wilmot recorded that dramatic moment as he stood there, and here it is, with the striking of the clock just audible above the roar of the guns as our troops moved to the water's edge. Speaking at 30 seconds to 9 o'clock on the evening of March the 23rd. In 30 seconds from now, the buffaloes carrying the assaulting troops will begin to cross the Rhine. The Rhine is now dark. The Bofors guns and the machine guns which are firing fresh bullets over the service have stopped, except for 4 or 5 Bofors guns which here are firing single shots to guide the buffaloes up to the water's edge.
There was no pause in that murderous barrage. And no enemy force could stand up to the inferno we sent over. Across the river, every building seemed aflame. And in the night, the Rhine was red with the glare of gun flashes and tracers. BBC war correspondent Winfred Vaughn Thomas sat in a Buffalo assault craft of the 15th Scottish Division. Their 0 hour was 2 o'clock in the morning. Still the guns thundered. Winfred Vaughn Thomas says it was the biggest barrage he has ever seen. And here's how he describes his crossing.
Everything that can shoot had for hours now been pouring this unimaginable fury of shellfire into the moonlit haze ahead of us. And our eyes were seared and red from the gun flashes. And the sound made a brutal impact on our ears. And overhead, the tracers formed a racing crisscross of fire. The German mortars were crumping down somewhere in the middle of it. And a shell whistled overhead and burst among the ploughed fields to the right of us. One of the boys whispered to me, trade my ticket in this, chum, for a trip down the Rhine, eh? Well, we had one lad who wouldn't have traded his ticket for anything. He was the battalion piper. He swore he'd pipe his comrades into battle. And while the rest of the Buffalo passengers were armed to the teeth, there he crouched, clutching his bagpipe. This was going to be his big moment. The barrage lashed itself into a new fury, and the commanding officer gave the order. The Buffalo driver... The Buffalo, by the way, a man by the Royal Tank Regiment, and Stagg, our Buffalo, had already been in action at Zeveland and Valkeren. The driver revved up, and we were on our way. First, through the gap blown in the bush. And then, at last, there before us was the river. It wasn't the Rhine of the picture postcard, flowing calm in the moonlight. No, this is a strange, bloodshot flood of a river. The waters looked red from the reflected glow of the tracers racing overhead. And on the far bank, every house and haystack we could see was burning. Our Buffalo dipped and then fairly slid down the steep wall that formed the west side of the street. And with a jolt and a splash, we were on the Rhine at last. I looked upstream. Other Buffaloes were splashing into the reddish water. And then the whole of our little fleet seemed to give a challenging roar as the engines opened up to full power, and we raced for the German bank. We had about 800 feet to go. The current was fast, and the crossing would take about 3 minutes. Well, those minutes seemed years. In the water, we just looked wide open targets. But the minutes passed, and now we were in midstream, and still the Germans hadn't opened up. The low east bank, with its sinister line of burning houses, came nearer and nearer. Still, no fire from the enemy. And then, with a jolt, the Buffalo hit the eastern bank and clawed at it for a moment and hoisted itself up, dripping, onto the firm ground. We were across, untouched. Well, there was an immense feeling of relief and excitement throughout our little party. The commanding officer gave the signal, and then the piper lifted his bagpipes to his lips. He blew, and only an agonized wailing came from his instrument. Again he tried. Again the wail. If ever a man was near to tears, it was our piper. This was his great moment. And now, as he cried to me in despair, "My pipeman, they will not play." Well, that was all right with us, because the Germans were not playing either. They may have been dazed by the weight of our barrage. They may have been preparing their resistance for the fight. We couldn't tell in the tiny section of the fighting that surrounded us. All we knew, as we lowered the ramp and jumped out onto that firelit river meadow, was that we were on the German side of the river at last. And that, for the enemy, is the fatal thing.
Throughout the night, Allied arms and men poured across the Rhine. And all along the 15 miles of riverbank, the air was solid with explosions. BBC war correspondent Stuart McPherson watched the crossings from three different locations: a forward artillery observation post, a commando headquarters, and an advanced field dressing station. Here is Stuart McPherson's report from Germany.
Watching the indescribable artillery barrage that was being showered down on the enemy in the darkness just across the river was a corps commander. Throughout the din, the general wore a supremely confident look, until suddenly a terrific burst of gunner fire was observed from the enemy bank. Without hesitation, he calmly turned to an artillery officer and said, "Get those guns." The officer picked up a phone and rumbled some orders into the mouthpiece. In a flash, there was a deafening, earth-shaking roar, and from the observation post, we could see a curtain of fire raining down bang on where the enemy flashes had been spotted. There was no further trouble from that particular point. The general quietly put down his night glasses and asked for the phone. Picking it up, he said, "Well done, lads." He then put down the receiver and turned to me and with a mischievous wink said, "They've got a ruddy cheek firing on my lad." An hour later, I watched commandos take off for Basel, wearing a thorn in our side, and their attitude simply defied description. You would have thought that they were embarking on a Union picnic. They just couldn't care less. A few minutes after they were due to arrive on the far side, Bomber Command were to deliver a crushing blow on the enemy in Wesel. While the commandos laid double over there, a bare 1,000 yards from Bomber Command's target, and waited. Smack on time, Arthur Harris and company house removers, as they were called by the commandos, arrived and delivered a nerve-shaking blow on the former Wesel stronghold. Back at headquarters, minutes ticked by. Officers waited anxiously for word from the commandos across the river. Suddenly, there was a signal. And a voice literally purred over the wireless.
Noisy blighters,
aren't they? We have taken position so-and-so and have met no trouble. 20 minutes after, the 15th Scottish Division had stormed across the river at Exanton, I watched the first wounded being brought back up from the riverbank. One of the first to come into the field dressing station was a typical Scotsman. It was obvious that he was badly hurt. But like the Scotch, he was griping about this and griping about that. The senior officer took hold of his hand and said, "You all right, laddie? And I wish I could do his accent for you." But he just looked up and said, "Sir, they ain't got an Effley over there." That's the sort of men who crossed the Rhine. The reputation of the Allied men-at-arms just could not have been in better hands.
Then, as daylight came, the next phase of the attack was on. The men of the airborne formations came in. Winfred Vaughan Thomas, now across the Rhine, watched them come, and this is what he saw.
These aircraft flew quite low, in perfect formation. And we could see, in the brilliant spring sunlight, the flashes on the perspex of the pilot's cabin. And there literally seemed to be hundreds and hundreds of these aircraft coming in from the west in an endless stream. And the roar of their engines drowned out the sound of the barrage thudding away beneath them. They were low enough, too, for us to see the doors and the fuselage open. And we could just make out the shape of the first man standing ready to jump. And there wasn't one of us on the banks of the Rhine below who didn't wave up and shout, "Good luck, boys." But they were flying straight towards the German flak. We saw the flak coming up around them as they crossed over the river. But not a flight broke formation. They just went straight through it to disappear to the east into the thick haze that was blotting out our view.
We have told you about only part of this great attack. In our next edition, Radio Newsreel will tell the story of the aerial assault east of the Rhine. As we speak, the attack goes on as the great Allied forces press deeper into Germany. Prime Minister Churchill this morning sent a message to the men of 21st Army Group, and these were his closing words.
"Once the River Rhine is pierced, and the crust of German resistance is broken, decisive victory in Europe will be near. May God prosper our arms in the noble adventure. After our long struggle for king and country, for dear life, and for the freedom of mankind."
And so, until our next edition, the BBC's Radio Newsreel says good night from London, England.
This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Radio Newsreel is broadcast twice every night in the North American service. The first edition is at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime. The second edition is at 8 p.m. Eastern Wartime.